At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Gentrification doesn't just happen, you know. It is, in point of fact, a business proposition. Our series York and Fig wraps up today from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday, today the 5th of December. Great as always to have you with us, everybody. We have spent a whole lot of time this week on economic change, on what happens when the slice of the economy that is closest to us, that is the place we live, starts to change in really fundamental ways. Our stories are the result of a 4.5-month project by our Wealth and Poverty team. This past summer, they moved up the road from our studios in downtown L.A. to a neighborhood called Highland Park. Highland Park is gentrifying. Money and people willing to spend it are moving in, which means people who've been there for decades sometimes are getting pushed out. The particular street that we set up shop on, Figueroa Street, has been changing especially fast. It's a faded retail corridor. And after decades of more or less the same stores lining the streets, cheap mom and pop shops, check cashing places and appliance repair stores, all of a sudden, they're being replaced by hot yoga studios and vegan-friendly restaurants and third-wave coffee shops. So, to wrap up our series York and Fig today, Marketplace's Chrissy Clark explains the business side of gentrification.
Buenas tardes.
For 23 years, Frank Cordova has owned a little shop on Figueroa Street. It's one of those stores that sells a little bit of everything. Picture frames, dictionaries.
Shampoo and car speakers.
All at a very deep discount. Frank's been behind his counter selling this stuff every day since the day back in 1991 when he hired a mariachi band to play at his grand opening. In all that time, no vacations, no sick days. No days off for anniversaries or birthdays.
If it's raining, you come to work. If it's sunny, you come to work. If it's windy, you come to work. No matter how it is, you always come to work.
Until the day you don't. A couple weeks ago, Frank took all the picture frames and car speakers and shampoo off the shelves, put them in storage, and went out of business. There were many reasons for it. A lot of his usual customers, mostly working-class Latinos, have moved away from the neighborhood or just weren't buying stuff like they used to. The final straw was when he'd gotten a recent call saying that his building had just been bought, that it was going to get renovated, and that after 2 decades of never changing, Frank's rent was about to go up a lot. Frank decided it was time to go.
It feels like crying. Yeah, it feels really sad, but what can we do? Everything changes, you know, nothing stays the same.
Everything changes. It's a phrase you hear a lot on this street lately, where little businesses like Frank's have been shutting down one after another after another. But the thing I've learned in the last few months as I've been talking to people at the center of the change that's going on here is that it doesn't just happen. It takes hard work from people who hope to make a lot of money making that change happen. People I'd like to introduce you to. First up, commercial real estate agent Nicole DeFlorian.
See, like this swap meet here, right? This is a swap meet.
Nicole, beige suit, hair in a bun, is standing in front of the Highland Park Swap Mall. a dingy brick building a few doors down from Frank's old place. It's a hodgepodge of kiosks that sell cheap jewelry and cell phones and underwear.
I don't know how they are still around and staying in business.
Nicole spends a lot of time in this neighborhood, staking out old buildings like Frank's old store, like the swap mall.
This could be broken up into like two or three little cute boutiques, and that's probably going to happen soon.
One of Nicole's specialties is something called re-tenanting. I'd never heard this word before, but in Nicole's line of work, it's a term of art, an actual job. Find buildings with low-rent tenants, ideally on a month-to-month lease, and
kick them out, re-tenant the property with new, fresh tenants at market rate.
Nicole says she knows the kicking out businesses part can sound harsh.
I do feel bad, but it is a business. And, you know, when these people are paying under market rents and we have a client that owns the property, I mean, we have to look out for our client's best interest, and it really comes down to business.
But actually finding those clients, just even knowing how to contact the property owners who Nicole would like to pitch her re-tenanting services to, that can be hard. Property records can be murky. Tenants don't always want to give you their landlord's phone number. Nicole has a strategy for this.
You know, what I typically do is go in and I see a store that's like this old appliance store that is not going to last for another year or so. So, you know, try to figure out how to get in touch with the owner, like say that I got hit in the back parking lot. I need to call insurance, so I need the property owner's information.
I had to admit I was a little surprised by this. So you will actually like say, oh, I got hit in the back parking lot.
Yeah, if I am having difficulty getting it, you know, sometimes you have to get creative and kind of, you know, do whatever it takes to get the information.
Once Nicole gets the owner's information, the pitch is pretty simple. She asks how much rent their current tenants pay. Usually it's something pretty low.
It was like $1.25 a square foot or something ridiculous.
At which point Nicole says, $1.25?
Well, look, you know, I have spaces across the street that I'm leasing for $2.50 a square foot. How does that sound?
If all goes as planned, out goes the old appliance shop and in comes
a cool new fitness studio or whatever.
And Nicole makes a nice commission. But a re-tenanter like Nicole is just one player in what you might call the gentrification industrial complex. A whole web of real estate leasing agents and listing agents and landlords and investors whose business models are all built on stoking and profiting from neighborhood change. This change starts as not much more than a trickle. New people move into a neighborhood they can afford to live in, maybe with a cute coffee shop nearby. Then the gentrification industrial complex turns that trickle into a flood, flipping houses to lure more people who drive prices up, and then
these guys coming in here, you know, spending $500,000-$600,000 for a home, you know, they want to have shopping. They want to have somewhere to eat, somewhere to drink, somewhere to spend their money on.
Patrick Delanian is another commercial real estate agent in Highland Park. His specialty is selling the buildings where all that new eating and drinking and shopping will take place.
I kind of play chess with these buildings here.
And he seems to be winning. Point at all of the buildings that you have or are
working on. Just across this right here.
He points at the building right in front of us.
Been working on that for a couple weeks.
And the one next door.
That we closed earlier in the year.
And the one next door to that.
Then you cross over the street a couple buildings up. That's the one that just recently traded hands a couple weeks ago.
Of the 11 storefronts on this two-block stretch, Patrick has sold or is currently selling almost half of them in the last year.
Building at a time, one step at a time, and we'll get it done.
My goal is to build a portfolio and own while this area improves.
That's Dave Walker. He and his partners just bought one of the buildings that Patrick Delanian just sold. What kind of portfolio would you like to have here?
Up and down the street, up and down Figueroa.
Now, Dave Walker is part of another key group in the gentrification industrial complex, real estate investors, the developers and landlords who want to buy up portfolios of buildings and who use folks like Patrick and Nicole as their agents. The interesting thing about Dave Walker and other investors I've talked to who've lately taken an interest in neighborhoods like Highland Park, until recently, their portfolios were filled with properties located in very different kinds of neighborhoods.
Suburban, quasi-urban, sprawling shopping centers, you know, typically with big box retailers and things like that.
But the suburbs are getting poorer, and the potential for high returns on an investment in a sprawling shopping mall, it's kind of tapped out. Meanwhile, back in urban neighborhoods, places once called disinvested because, well, investors like Dave avoided them for so long. In those places, Dave watched property values and investment returns start to soar.
From, you know, hundreds of dollars a square foot to multiple thousands of dollars a square foot right under my nose. And I was very frustrated that I wasn't participating in it. And I kind of swore that I wasn't going to let that happen again.
Which brought Dave Walker to this cavernous building on Figueroa Street.
Downstairs we go.
A giant defunct camera emporium that did business in Highland Park for decades.
Okay, welcome to 1957.
Walker and his investors just bought it for $3.4 million. They're hoping to rehab it, lease it out, and eventually make a 25% return on their investment.
By the way, this does remind me of my grandmother's basement, just a little bit.
Dave has spent the last few months giving tours of this building, first to potential investors, a network of high net worth individuals, as they're called, friends of his and people he knows from his shopping mall days. Now the tours are for potential tenants, and the reactions fall into one of two categories, fascination or horror. A team of workers has filled 15 dumpsters with all the stuff the former owners left behind when they retired. But what Dave Walker wants to focus on right now are good bones.
You can see where the plaster has come off the walls, and you can see what's cooking. We've got exposed brick laying right behind that. It's got that intangible, which is hard to come by, which is a cool factor.
The prospective tenants he's showing around today own a series of trendy bars in L.A. Dave takes them outside for his final pitch. Sure, it looks bad now, but he says imagine on the top floor offices for tech startups.
A little cliche, but there's not a lot of it around. It's an opportunity. Who goes downstairs? Well, we think bar, restaurant. We think potential gym.
Like one of those upscale spinning gyms or something.
SoulCycle, even though this isn't the right demographic for them yet.
Yet. That little three-letter word, that is the key to Dave's business plan. To make money in a neighborhood like this as an investor, you need to buy property before the demographics change too much, when prices are still relatively cheap. And then you need to do all you can to make sure the demographics keep changing, so people who can afford to shop at more expensive businesses keep coming, so you can rent to those businesses. That's the only way, Dave says, he can convince his investors to go into a place like Highland Park.
For a higher risk neighborhood, that's kind of what we look for. Knowing with some level of certainty that the rents are going to go up, that that $1 rent is going to become the $3 rent, or the $4 rent, or the $12 rent.
And for that to happen, the cheap mom and pop shops, the swap malls, Frank Cordova's little discount variety store, they have to go. Their going out of business sales aren't just unfortunate side effects of the process, they are the process. Dave is pretty frank about this, and also frank about the downsides he sees to it.
It's a slippery slope because in certain instances, the neighborhood will lose its local natural flavor.
But, he says,
when you're investing and improving, you just don't stop. There's no natural stopping point. There's no air brake in the middle that says, oh, that's enough. Enough profit, I'll take that, or that's a high enough rent. I've made enough return on my money. That's pretty cool. I don't need to make any more. That's not human nature. That's not how capitalism works. And that's the life that we are in.
And that's the process that we're in neighborhoods across this country and across this neighborhood of Highland Park. In fact, just a few miles away, even more capital looking for higher returns has been buying up property along Highland Park's other main drag, York Boulevard. GPI Companies is a real estate investment firm that raises millions of dollars from wealthy individuals and pools that with tens of millions of dollars from private equity firms on Wall Street. Drew Planting is one of its founders.
We spend a lot of time thinking about where to deploy capital to buy things and build things.
One day, Drew was helping his stepfather buy a new house, and on his way, he happened to drive through Highland Park. He saw a rundown pet store with a for sale sign on the front, right next to a craft brew pub. He pulled over his car and called his partner, Cliff.
And I said, we're all in. Cliff, we are all in. My 75-year-old stepfather looks at me like, what are you talking about?
Drew's company has since bought two properties on that street, and he's looking for more. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
YorkandFig.com is where you can find more on our series. Pictures, videos, a blog, and all the rest of the stories as well live right there online. I'll give you one guess what Wall Street did today after that jobs report. We will have the details when we do the numbers.
You know your neighborhood is being gentrified when you, worried about being the gentrifier, are then 2 months later gentrified.
When people will pay $5 for a cup of coffee.
You stop having bartenders and start having mixologists.
That was Nathan Fan from Los Angeles, Lindsay Matouche and Shane Mosby from St. Louis answering the question we have been asking you guys all week. What is gentrification to you? All right, we are going to start our weekly wrap on the topic of gentrification and then move to the economic news of the week. Lee Gallagher is at Fortune Magazine. Cardiff Garcia is with the blog FT Alphaville. Hey, guys.
Hi, Kai.
Hey, Kat.
So, Lee, I will tell you, you were carefully selected for today's wrap. You have written a book almost specifically on this subject of suburbia and cities and what's happening in them. It is called The End of the Suburbs. And my question to you, as we start to, you know, nationalize this story, right, because we've been really local on the broadcast this week. This is a national phenomenon and not just in big cities. I'm thinking here of Allentown, Pennsylvania, where you were for your book, where I was with Jim Fallows a number of months ago, and they're pouring billions of dollars into downtown to fix it up.
Indeed they are. Allentown is a really interesting story. And just like Highland Park, it's a microcosm of what's happening really on a national scale. And I would say there's sort of two kind of partner trends mm-hmm. happening here. One is gentrification and the other is urbanization. And they're oftentimes the same thing, but they're not always the same thing. Where you have urbanization, you inevitably soon have gentrification. But what's happening is people really want to be in a downtown area, whether they're in a big city, a small city, a medium-sized city, or even in the middle of a sprawling suburb. So all of these kind of reinvestment and revitalization projects are happening, Allentown being a prime example.
And they are painful experiences for the people who live there, right, Lee?
Yeah, they can be. I mean, look what's happened here in New York, for example, or any major city, because cities are so resurgent for a number of reasons. Crime has gone down. Noxious factories have long ago vacated cities. They're now these wonderfully resplendent places to live. And so the prices have gone they've just risen so high in not just Manhattan, but in Kansas City, in everything that calls itself a city in this country, they've seen some kind of price appreciation. So that pushes people out in a big way.
Cardiff, on that topic of people getting pushed out, I wonder if this series and this project and this issue of gentrification is sort of a microcosm of arguably the enduring economic issue of our time, which is inequality and the growth thereof, huh?
Yeah, certainly in some ways. And I don't think you can sort of ignore the relevance of inequality trends for what's happening here, primarily because it's the least well off. It's those people who were victims of being re-tenanted, according to that piece, that really bear the disproportionate brunt of what happens with gentrification. They're the ones that have to leave the neighborhood. They're the ones that have to find a new neighborhood with their families. And in many cases, I mean, they don't have a lot of means to do that. But I would really emphasize the point that we are not powerless to mitigate the negative impact of gentrification, at least a little bit. I mean, it's always going to be happening in some places, right? But let's remember that a lot of these cities that Lee just brought up have very restrictive laws on how much construction can take place. Well, if you loosen those laws up and you allow more construction to respond to higher demand, then it really does mitigate the price impact. It keeps rents and prices from going up as much, and there wouldn't be quite as much gentrification as there is in the first place. So I think that's something that we really need to look at.
All right. We will turn in the minute that we have left to the jobs report from this morning. Lee, quickly, 321,000 jobs, 5.8%. Nothing but good news, yeah?
It was really all good news. There wasn't much you could say that's negative today. It was earnings were up, hours worked were up. There's other stuff if you look at. Bankruptcies are down, GDP is improving, but this jobs number was really the one that kind of it's the jobs number.
All right,
all waiting for.
Yeah. Can we then, Cardiff, put the nail in the coffin of the economy is stuck?
I think we're getting closer.
Oh,
you know,
man.
there's
you
still
are
some
always
problems.
The guy who says no.
No, I gotta tell you though, Kai, because usually I'm the one who's a little bit skeptical.
Yeah.
But even this reminds me of the old line that Americans are gonna have to face the facts, no matter how pleasant they are. You know, I mean, this was really an unambiguously good report. It's the first we've had in a while where you can't even say, well, wage growth wasn't good, because in this case, it was good. 10 straight months of 200,000 plus jobs. I think the trend is very solid.
Cardiff Garcia from the blog FT Alphaville and Lee Gallagher from Fortune Magazine. Her book is called The End of the Suburbs. Thanks, you guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Kai.
Thanks, Kai.
See ya.
tough to have these arguments in New York because I know it more in New York than I can say about LA, but New York is change, you know, it is forever changing. And so like to hate that is to hate the city.
Antonio Rodriguez right there sharing his bi-coastal gentrification experience. All right, coming up.
I just worry that part of the old neighborhood will be completely replaced.
Three neighbors, three takes on a gentrifying neighborhood. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 58 points today, a third of 1%, 17,958. Oh, so close to Dow 18K, if you're counting. The NASDAQ gained 11 points, one quarter of 1%, 4780. The S&P 500 up 3 points, a 10%, 2075. For the 5 days gone by, the Dow up 7 tenths of 1%. The NASDAQ down, actually 0.2%. The S&P 500 up 0.4%. Bad day for retailers. Teen store Five Below sank 12 points today after predicting a weaker holiday season than expected. Delia's, another teen store, announced its final sale, saying it's filing for bankruptcy and closing all stores. Shares dropped a rock-bottom 83%, which, you know, happens when you say you're shutting down. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note up to 2.30%. You're listening to Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. The 113th Annual Baseball Winter Meetings continue in San Diego. Doors frontman Jim Morrison was born on December 8, 1943. He would have been 71. And to fuel you through the holidays, December is National Eggnog Month. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Our series about gentrification this week has been fundamentally a series about people. Right, about how their personal economies are changing because their neighborhood, Highland Park, is changing. With that in mind, I went back out to our bureau yesterday at the corner of York Boulevard and Figueroa Street to talk with three of the people you have heard on the air this week. Vidal Reyna and Mickey Jackson have each lived in Highland Park for decades. He's a waiter in his family-owned restaurant. She's an artist, and she works for the AIDS Healthcare Foundation as well. Erica Daking moved in 3 years ago. She runs a vegetarian restaurant there called Kitchen Mouse. And it's worth a mention here that they met each other, all three of these people, for the first time when they sat down for this conversation. So I started by asking them what we have been asking you all week. What is gentrification? Vidal Reyna went first.
It's definitely been a transformation of the neighborhood. I just worry that part of the old neighborhood will be completely replaced.
Mickey, you're nodding.
Yeah, I have kind of been chased by gentrification from neighborhood to neighborhood because I'm not a wealthy person.
Erica, what about you? Gentrification is?
I think maybe people would consider me like I am the problem, the gentrifier. Like I came to this neighborhood 3 years ago and then I fell in love with the neighborhood. When I was opening Kitchen Mouse, I was thinking about...
Which is your restaurant.
Which is my restaurant. Yep. I was thinking, you know, now that I love the neighborhood, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to buy a house here or stay here, or is it going to keep going and going and going? I'm a small business. I'm an independent business. My spot before was a check cashing place.
The spot where your restaurant
is. Yeah. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say I'm one of the people who chased anyone out. You know, I filled an empty space and I put in something I thought would be fair and good for the neighborhood.
Actually, one of my friends, Bonnie, I think, works at your place.
Oh, I love Bonnie.
Yeah, so, I mean, she has a job here. I mean, it's walking distance from her place. You know, people have to make a living. It's, you're opening up a business, giving people employment. There's nothing wrong with that.
I think there's waves of things that become gentrification. And a lot of the people who are in the early waves are like you. You know, as he said, they're an asset. But what happens is once the people who are small businesses have built and people begin to come and all that, then the large corporate businesses move in.
That's exactly what I was
saying. And that's the
death
knell.
You guys know, right, that there is money behind all this stuff that's happening. It's folks who are buying spaces. It's the folks who are back in your restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there is money driving a lot of this change.
There's money, and then there's money.
Fair enough. Vidal, what about you? You're a waiter in your family's restaurant, right?
Uh-huh.
So, in theory, you're busier.
We're doing good, yeah.
Yeah.
We have a different clientele coming in, clientele that tips better. The house that my wife and I bought, a duplex, we're able to rent the other unit. It helps us out with the mortgage, definitely.
Huh. Erica, I mean, you wouldn't be here if this place wasn't changing, right?
I don't know how to answer that. I guess that's true, but what I'm really liking, this place has amazing bones. And I love...
Yeah, it's like a good house, right?
I love seeing the houses being redone and cleaned up. And I'm afraid of condos, and I'm afraid of people bringing in ugly buildings. I love seeing people renovate what's already here.
A lot of people don't start noticing a neighborhood till it becomes hip and trendy. And the place has a rich history.
Mickey?
Change is going to happen, and the best you can do is figure out how to maximize the good parts and how to deal with the parts that are not great.
Thanks, you guys, a lot.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Mickey Jackson, Vidal Reyna, and Erica Daking at our bureau in Highland Park the other day. All right, same question to you then. What does gentrification look like where you live? Take a picture of it, tag it Gentrification Is, put it on Instagram, and we'll check it out. There are lots more personal stories, before and after gentrification pictures from Highland Park, videos as well, the whole smash. The website is yorkandfig.com.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note on the way out today, just because it's a Friday, and you know, Friday. On this date, December the 5th, 1933, Utah became the 36th state to ratify the 21st Amendment, which meant, as President Franklin Roosevelt put it at the time, we could end the, quote, repugnant conditions of prohibition. So go ahead, have a beer. It's in the Constitution, and it's Friday. All right, we're done. Our series, York and Fig, was produced by Caitlin Esch and Lindsay Thomas. The website where the whole thing lives, yorkandfig.com, was built by Paul Brent and Arjuna Soriano. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace was developed by JJ Yore. The program is produced by Sitar Nieves. Deborah Clark is the vice president and executive producer. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have a really good weekend. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.